We'll hear arguments next in 76839, Foley against Canelli. Mr. Weiss, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please this Court, this case involves the exclusion of all non-citizens from all jobs in the New York State Police Department as troopers, etc. By such exclusion, various constitutional precepts are violated. First, there is the group at consideration, aliens. Aliens have been considered by this Court, and justly so, a discrete insular minority. They are, on the one hand, vulnerable because of their peculiar status. On the other hand, they contribute by their presence here to the country.
Who were the constituents in the discrete insular minority that Justice Stone referred to?
In that case, they were not aliens. They were, you're talking about footnote 4, I take it. Yeah. There was any group that could be classified particularly as having discrete characteristics. It was a generic classification. In this case, we have what has been characterized by this Court as an example of that minority.
In fact, what were they in Justice Stone's embrace?
I don't recall at this moment, Your Honor. I do recall they were not aliens.
That was in the Caroline Products.
Yes, that's footnote number 4 in Caroline Products.
And I think the footnote was not necessary, perhaps, to the decision of that case.
No, I agree, Your Honor. And I wasn't relying upon the footnote number 4 of Caroline Products, but rather the description in
Justice Blackmun's opinion for the Court.
That's right, which refers back to that and gives it cognitive content. That is the reference we made. I'm aware of the dispute as to whether that was an appropriate reference back, but that is the law concerning aliens. These are individuals, of course, who have undergone federal scrutiny and are here pursuant to a federal statute.
Well, do you think there's a difference between a discrete insular group, whether minority or otherwise, when they are, let us say, American Indians or Negroes or women or men who cannot change their condition? That's one kind of a discrete insular group. Do you think it is... Do you think aliens fit into that kind of a definition of the group?
They can and they cannot. The question is, when is that distinction important? In this case, for example, some of the aliens cannot change their status for the purpose of this case and rid themselves of the exclusionary burden. There are others who perhaps could. So for the purpose of this case, that is not a functional distinction, but it could be a distinction that could come into play in other cases.
As I understand the record, Mr. Foley could not become a citizen in time to meet the age requirement.
That's correct, Your Honor. And therefore, this is a status which he and others like him are unable to change. There may be other individuals, because the category is so broad, that could, in fact, change their status, and they, too, would fall under this rubric. But that distinction could not be made for the purpose of this case. It might be made for different statutes and different considerations at different times. I think it's also important to note what is at stake here, what right we are talking about excluding these non-citizens from.
Mr. Weiss, could I ask one question? Your client could not change his status in time to qualify. But this is a class action, is it not?
That's correct.
Now, is the class limited to plaintiffs who could not change their status because of the age qualification, or does it apply to all aliens?
Apply to all aliens, Your Honor. Because that is how the statute sweeps, and that is includes those two, if you want, possibly distinguishable subclasses, those that can and those that cannot. The right at stake here is employment. This Court has consistently held, and particularly in conjunction with alien rights, that employment is a crucial right. In particular, this is employment in a police department. For whatever reasons may be evoked to justify such an exclusion, they would seem to frustrate rather than further these purposes. To have an efficient police force, you want to have the largest pool to select from of capable individuals. By excluding aliens, whose contributions we welcome in other spheres, we cut down that possibility. We eliminate certain applicants who may be superior to those who would be accepted when you eliminate this group. In particular, since we are a country of some heterogeneity and a country of traditional immigrants, and there are large foreign-speaking populations, it can even be suggested, as the amicus has, that there is a need to go into this pool of potential foreign speakers and people who have some ability to relate from time to time, in addition to immigrant
groups. Are you suggesting that aliens who cannot speak English are also a discrete insular minority or group?
I would suggest they are, but not one that I would want in the police force. That was not suggested. The suggestion is that it's fairly possible to recruit for particular skills, regardless of race, creed, or color. For example, if you have a large Spanish-speaking population, you might want to recruit Spanish-speaking policemen, regardless of their race. If you exclude yourself or have excluded from the pool a large population which speaks Spanish as well as English, you may in fact be limiting your ability to recruit able police officers with this virtue you're looking for. What I'm suggesting is that the amicus suggestion may have some validity, that there may be virtue in even looking out for aliens to respond to particular community needs, but that, no question, the ultimate resolution has to be the merit of the individual to serve in the police force. They must pass those tests. And the more people we have applying of ability, the more likely we are to have a better group to, in fact, carry out the law enforcement duties.
So various estimates made from time to time, some governmental and some private, are that we have from the range of 8 million to possibly as high as 12 million illegal aliens in the country. Would you think illegal aliens are a discrete insular group?
Once again, Your Honor, I'm sure they are, but not one I think we should have in the police force. The police force deals with people who must enforce a law, and one of the screened characteristics one should have in police force is to exclude those people who have committed illegal acts. We would not want the discrete minority ex-convicts.
Obviously, whether it's 8 million or 12 million or 6 million, obviously this is a large group of people who need some attention from law enforcement people, and to pursue your theory, this is a if you went into the illegal aliens, you'd have a group with some compatibility and empathy toward that group, thereby enlarging the pool, as you put it.
Well, the argument could also be made that for that reason you ought to hire ex-felony convicts because they have some identity with the...
But it isn't my argument. No. It's your argument.
No. I'm suggesting that there's certain standards which should be met. They should include very clear skills of handling weapons, the language, understanding the law, and also I would think a policeman should, as a servant of the law, be expected to have lived up to the law. So anybody who is tainted by illegality. The issue is not whether
you can... Would it make any difference to the points you're making if the alien had been in the country for 10 years and just had ignored the opportunities to become a citizen?
Insofar as he continues to commit a crime, I would think
No, I'm not talking about illegals. I'm talking about your man now.
Yeah.
The person in your class, of your client. If the person had been in the country 10 years with abundant opportunity to become a citizen, would that make any difference?
Would it make any difference in this case? In my opinion, it would not, because it would merely be a different plaintiff for the same class. So we have these two classes that are covered by the statute, those who cannot change their status and those who can. I also suggest that perhaps even for those individuals who can change their status, the clear implications of Mao Clay, they too would be covered by this court's decisions, particularly since, as Your Honor suggested in Mao Clay, the employment right is also a crucial factor in establishing whether or not something is unconstitutional discrimination.
As to the illegal alien, isn't it true that when he shows up, he'll no longer be an applicant?
I would think that he'd be an applicant for deportation more likely than the state police force, yes.
Mr. Weiss, you really are speaking only of resident legal aliens, are
yes.
you not? Secondly, we're concerned here with the so-called New York State troopers. And as I understand that, that is divided into three separate departments. The one assigned to the governor and so forth, and the other one, highway patrol officers, and the third, the civilian guard detective force, the CID or something. Would your case be any different? Would you be here if we were concerned only with the New York City Police Department? Would you be making the same arguments?
I would think after Dougal versus Sugarman, the case would be very similar, yes. I think I'd still be here in New York City, but in New York State, because it has the whole statewide application breaks down this way, probably a clear example, but I think I have a similar case for the city, yes.
I ask this because you have referred to a class as policemen. That for some reason gives me a municipal reaction rather than a state reaction, perhaps strongly. So you make the same argument.
Yeah.
Lastly, in New York State, is a permit to carry a gun under certain circumstances obtainable?
I believe that you mean for a private citizen?
Yes.
Yes, I believe in both New York State and New York City you can obtain.
Is it restricted to citizens or may aliens also get it?
Your Honor, I do not know.
You have so many New York statutes that restrict everything to citizens, I wonder. Yeah.
Well, New York State, as we suggested in brief, in one period passed a whole series of alien exclusion and alien discrimination statutes covering a whole, what I say, crazy quilt of possibilities. We list some. I do not know about handguns. If the court wants, I can submit a brief statement a couple of days after argument.
Do you know if what's called the Sullivan Law?
Yes.
Is that a New York City ordinance or state?
I believe it's a New York City ordinance.
New York City.
State law. Well, we can ask.
My impression, Your Honor, is fairly clear that it's the a city, and my learned counsel here agrees with me in that. I believe the New York City Sullivan Law and prohibits carrying handguns. We do not believe it applies in the state. But I can again clarify that.
But the Sullivan Law is a felony, isn't it?
I believe
the city have felonies?
I think the Sullivan Law is a misdemeanor, but I'm not sure on that. But I'm pretty sure it's a city law. I believe it's for carrying concealed handguns, and I believe also it's a registration thing and the various exclusions. Again, I'm not familiar with that has an alien aspect to it. I think the exclusionary categories deal with character and past criminal convictions and the like.
Do aliens have the right to leave the United States without a passport? I suppose I have a passport from my own country.
I believe that an alien with a resident alien with a green card can, with permission from the consul, come and go from the United States.
Permission from the consul?
Consul of the United States, I believe. You have to notify them when you're going and coming back. But if you go out for more than a particular period of time, you surrender that status. And therefore, they have to be notified that you were leaving, and we get permission.
If an English alien, for example, wishes to go back to England for a holiday, does he have to get permission from anyone?
I don't know, Your Honor. I believe so. I do not know. Again, I can answer that. I do know that you have to maintain residence and connection with the United States for a period of time in order to retain your green card. It is our essential conceptual argument here that the conjunction of Dougal versus Sugarman, which says you cannot exclude non-citizens from public employment in New York State, and Ray Frey Griffith, which holds that you cannot prevent aliens from being lawyers, combined make an a fortiori case that you cannot exclude people who want to apply for various law enforcement jobs. A policeman or a trooper carries out the law under supervision, under directions, and in conjunction with a whole paramilitary organization has been characterized by the state.
On the other hand, isn't a member of your group expected to excel and to go up the scale of the hierarchy so that perhaps before long he might be a captain or major, whatever you call him, and be exercising a lot more policy decisions?
If it is possible for policemen at the top to exercise policy decisions, it might be possible for one of this class eventually be considered for that position. At that point, however, I believe, in addition, the head of the New York State Police makes individual determinations as to who should be promoted. So if there were anything which could conceivably be relevant in connection with his alienage, that would then be considered at that time. But in any event, this statute does not speak to a specific narrow group of possible policymakers in the New York State Police Department, but rather to every single conceivable applicant to the New York State Police organization. As a consequence, since this is such a broad exclusion, since it flies in the face of defining narrowly who can be excluded and for what reason, since it frustrates the purposes of having a police force, since it falls against the whole line of precedents that this court has issued and have been generated by this court's decisions, we submit that the exclusion from the state police department for all non-citizens must be declared unconstitutional. And I'd like to reserve whatever time I have for rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. Weiss. Mrs. Gordon.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the issue presented for determination on this appeal is whether permanent resident aliens may be excluded from membership, the sworn officer status, of the New York State Police under New York Executive Law Section 215.3, consistently with the aliens' rights under the Equal Protection Clause. Contrary to the suggestions in appellant's brief and portion of his argument here today, there is no issue with respect to aliens who are in the alleged dilemma of being caught between the federal 5-year durational residence requirement for naturalization and the generally applicable 29-year-old age requirement for appointment to the state police.
You say there is none?
There is no such issue, Your Honor, and that is for the reason that the case was brought as a class action of all permanent resident aliens, and I should note here, Your Honor, that, of course, there's no issue with respect to any other types of aliens, temporary resident aliens or illegal aliens. In any event, the class, as defined and stipulated to by appellant, is of all permanent resident aliens who, but for the citizenship limitation in Section 215.3, would be eligible to apply for a position with the state police, for membership in the state police.
Did the district court certify a class?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is the class essentially as I've given it to you, and it appears in the district court opinion, the majority opinion, at pages 8-3 through 4 of the appendix to the jurisdictional statement. There is, of course, no reference in that definition of the class to the subjective expectations of the individuals involved as to whether or not they would want to become citizens. Likewise, there is no reference in that class action order to the probable or improbable likelihood of the frustration of those expectations, assuming that the individuals had them, by the operation of the general age requirement. Now, the record below, in addition, does not support any such alleged dilemma.
The age, the page number that you gave us,
is A3 through 4 of the district court, of the appendix to the jurisdictional statement. Your Honor, I would call to your attention that in this case, the opinions are contained in the appendix to the jurisdictional statements, and that the appendix filed on this appeal, the beige copy, has some documents of records that were not previously filed.
But, Mrs. Gordon, this class is a little different, at least in its a little broader than the one you identified. This talks about all the plaintiff and all other alien residents of the state of New York who have applied or will apply for the position of state trooper. Now, that doesn't talk about permanent resident aliens, nor legal aliens, nor anything else. That's all, I suppose, implied, but it's not stated.
Your Honor, I think that is expressly implied, and the I'm just trying to find the original stipulation.
Perhaps,
Your Honor.
But on A3 and A4, that's what it says.
Yeah. Your Honor, if Your Honor looks at the beige appendix,
right.
D22.
B22?
Right. All the pages in the beige appendix are D pages. And at page 22, Your Honor will find the stipulation so ordered by Judge Pollack, which defines the class as consisting of all permanent resident aliens who, but for the enforcement of New York Executive Law 215.3, would otherwise be eligible to compete for employment as a state trooper.
And I suppose all permanent resident aliens implies that they're not illegal aliens.
Yes, and that they're not temporary aliens, Your Honor.
Certainly permanent means not temporary.
Yes, and
as I... There's about legal.
Right, and as I was just indicating to you, because the age of the appellant was not raised below, because his entering status was not raised below, and because the date of his permanent resident status was not raised below, there was no dilemma hypothecated before the district court, and obviously the district court majority so proceeded. In fact, if you look at Judge Mansfield's dissent, you will find the reference to the alleged dilemma footnoted in his opinion as a point raised in the appellant's reply brief before that court after the case was
And this class.
And this class. In other words, there is no...
Inevitably include some in that dilemma.
It might very well include some in that dilemma, but the dilemma, the specific one that appellant seeks to argue, even if you concede him the facts that he now alleges in his reply brief, namely that he cured a permanent resident status in 1974 and that he will be 30 years old in 1980, he now alleges he was
born in 1950. But this class, by definition, of those who would otherwise be eligible to compete for employment would include all resident aliens up to age 29.
That
and
is
obviously
correct.
Would include, therefore, many who could not become naturalized citizens before they were too old
that
to apply.
That is correct. It would
just inevitably.
That might be so, except with respect to this named plaintiff, it is not so, because based on his new facts, as alleged, since he will not be 30 until 1980, and since he can become a citizen in 1979, he could be fully qualified to compete in the next examination series. That is the point. That is our point on that, with respect to that issue.
Well, if that becomes critical at all, may there not be some problem with the breadth of the class certification?
If that is the issue, Your Honor, there would be a problem with the breadth of the class certification, and it's our position here that that class certification cannot be modified to admit of what are essentially new allegations by the plaintiff. However, I think that it is somewhat... difficult for me to quite understand the force of appellant's argument with respect to the alleged dilemma. If plaintiff were actually in a dilemma, it would connote that he wanted to become a citizen. The distinction that that appellant has attempted to draw throughout this litigation is that aliens qua aliens are excluded, and that is the kind of distinction that was made in Dougal, the kind of distinction that was made in Griffiths, and indeed the basis on which the district court determined the issue.
But what if this court were to hold that although as to aliens who fulfill their residency requirement and could become citizens before their 29th birthday, there is no denial of equal protection worked by the New York statute. As to those in the class that appellant alleges he is in, those who can't become citizens by their 29th birthday, there is a discrimination. What does the court do with the class certification?
It would seem that the court would have to avoid it, Your Honor, except that I think that...
How do we avoid it?
Well, you would obviously have to... it was my view, Your Honor, that you could not change the class certification and that the class certification framed the issue in the case, and accordingly this dilemma was not reached. If the class action certification had to be modified, And frankly, I don't think that that is necessary for the determination of this case because, as Mr. Justice Stewart points out, there are bound to be some individuals. This dilemma is illustrative of some potential class members. But if the certification were to be modified, it would seem that the case would have to be remanded, Your Honor.
And if you win, you don't worry about it at all.
That's right, Your Honor.
Well, that's what I think you should be getting.
Your Honor.
Mrs. Gordon, can I ask one question about the qualification?
Yes.
Age 29 is the minimum or the maximum age at which you can become a state policeman or get on the list of those who can work up into becoming state policeman?
Technically, Your Honor, 29 would be the age, 29 to the 30th year would be the age for appointment from the list. However, the statute 215.3, in which that limitation is incorporated, provides a discretion to the superintendent to extend the maximum age to 35, and indeed it makes mandatory for up to 6 years extensions by virtue of the performance of military service. And that is another aspect which we indicate in our brief would relieve petitioner appellant of his dilemma.
All he has to do is join the Army in the meantime.
Well, oh yes, that is one thing he could do, Your Honor, but he could also, I mean, it would be frivolous to think, Your Honor, that had appellant pursued in a reasonable course his application for citizenship, and had he taken the test and the time came for appointment and he was 20, about to be 31, but could not be naturalized because of the formal proceedings which are incident to that. In other words, he was waiting to take his oath before a federal officer, it would be frivolous to think that the superintendent would not extend his time, since he may extend the age up to 35, to accommodate what were delays not within the control of the appellant.
But it is discretionary, even though he was
it
on the list.
It is discretionary, Your Honor, yes. Your Honors, a state is sovereign because it both creates and enforces its own laws. A state police officer performs sovereign functions in New York because he, in fact, enforces New York laws. His powers to arrest throughout the state on his own initiative for all crimes and offenses, his power to use force, including deadly force, his power to search, his power to stop and frisk, and to issue commands to the general population which must be obeyed, which cannot be resisted by force, are extraordinary and are unique to his office. If the officer exercises these powers, his acts result in the forcible detention of an individual and the seizure of private property. In addition, his acts result in the initiation of the criminal justice process. If he does not arrest, the officer has, like the juror at a criminal trial, acquitted a potential defendant on facts which, in the judgment of another, might constitute a crime or arrest. A police officer must decide which course of action to follow, and he alone is responsible for his actions. If his judgment is questioned, he is entitled to a defense only of the reasonableness of his acts, and judged on the existing circumstances at the time his acts are placed in question. He cannot rely on superior orders, and he has no such defense under New York State law.
Ms. Gordon, you mentioned a juror. Are aliens allowed to sit on juries?
No, Your Honor. Aliens are not allowed to serve.
That's in that whole bunch of statutes he was talking about.
Well, it's at least clear that aliens cannot be grand or petty federal jurors or grand or petty state jurors. The court recently affirmed Perkins versus Smith involving the state court juror, which had a citizenship requirement. The state police officer not only performs a governmental function when he protects and prevents crimes against private persons and property, but he performs specific functions in aid of the preservation of the state itself as a political entity. He must guard against civil disorder, insurrection, subversion, and breaches of state security. He guards the life of the chief executive and other dignitaries in the state. In light of the importance of his functions and his identification with government, New York has designated him as a public officer since exactly 1917, when the state police were created. Now, appellant does not dispute that the powers we have just described are, in fact, the powers exercised by police.
Mrs. Gordon, you said the state designated him as a public officer. What follows from that? Is there a definition somewhere in the Constitution of the New York or elsewhere as to what follows from being a public officer?
Well, it's of some interest, Your Honor, that in this Court's opinion in Dougal versus Sugarman, the Court adopted a formulation of public officer which a New York
tied
State
to the
formulation
definition in New York
of public
State?
Officer. Pardon me?
Tied to somehow to the definition in New York State?
Yes, well, in New York State, a public officer is one who exercises a portion of the sovereignty of the state. That is, he is involved in the creation of the law, the enforcement of the law, or like a judge, in the interpretation of the law. Now, as a historical matter, public officer categories of public officers have eventuated in New York essentially by accretion, other than in the common law tradition, other than the few public officers that are maybe designated in the Constitution or by statute. And the individual police officer, the state police officer, is specifically designated to be that public officer because of these powers which invoke the sovereignty of the state.
I see.
Of course, in making an arrest, they surely invoke the sovereignty of the state, do they not?
That is correct, Your Honor. He is, in fact, the embodiment of the sovereignty
even
of the state.
Even directing traffic, I suppose.
When the officer pulls you over to the side, I think perhaps you could look at it this way, Your Honor. The response of the individual in society to the officer's command, whether it is in the arrest or whether it is in obedience to an order that he may give to a crowd or whether it is because he pulls you over to the side of the road, that response, that obedience is given to him because he is, in this set of circumstances, the embodiment of the law. In that sense, he is the sovereign, and in that sense, his order shall be obeyed.
There are some judicial opinions, I don't recall them at the moment, which have said, even if they were not holdings, that a police officer on their beat exercises a broader discretion than a judge on the bench.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that is one of our points here, because, for example, it is only the judge at a criminal trial who is both interpreter of the law and trier of fact who exercises the complete panoply of incidents that the police officer exercises. His functions, the police officer's functions are discretionary because given the law, he must interpret it and he must apply it to the facts. His guidelines, if you will, in that respect are exactly the same as the criminal court judge and indeed less complete than the juror because the juror functions under instructions and charges given to him by the judge and indeed less complete than the grand juror who functions under judicial advice and prosecutorial advice.
Don't you think they're all very completely spelled out in our Fourth Amendment decisions?
What is spelled out in your Fourth Amendment?
The guidelines.
Yes, Your Honor, but the...
Not really, do you?
The guidelines are no more spelled out for the police officer than they are for the judge, and I think that that is the quintessence of it.
Wouldn't it be subject to the same... Wouldn't it be subject to exactly the same examination that anybody else to find out whether he knew what the law was, whether he knew how to conduct himself, and to whether he knew how to act in the name of the state? Wouldn't he have to pass the exact same examination?
Yes, Your Honor, he would have
and
to pass
it. If he passed it and he was the head on the list, he couldn't get the job.
That is correct, Your Honor. Because the preeminent concern here, Your Honor, is whether the state, when it seeks to enforce its sovereign power, shall have the choice of selecting from members of its own political community or whether it shall be compelled to select from members who are strangers to that community and who are members of another sovereign community. It is a question of...
How were they strangers?
Because by definition...
They pay the same taxes you do.
That's correct, Your Honor. But they are...
They live right next to you.
That is correct, Your Honor.
How do you know that?
And they go to school with you.
Ms. Gordon, I take it, I'm repeating my question now to your opposition. If we were concerned here with the New York City Police Department, you would be making exactly the same argument.
Your Honor, I think that is correct, but I think that that is the exact limitation to which I would go. For example, state police officers are said to perform the highest law enforcement function because of their statewide jurisdiction, but they do enforce all of the penal law of the state of New York as well as some other criminal statutes. A police officer in a metropolitan police district, while his geographic area would be narrower, equally enforces the full panoply of the penal law within that jurisdiction.
Do you know whether the statutes or whatever it is that govern the New York City Police Department require that officers be
citizens? Yes, Your Honor.
So you would be defending that. Would you do the same thing with a two-man police force in some small town in upstate New York?
First of all, Your Honor, the Administrative Code of the City of New York does, in fact, require police officers of the City of New York to be citizens, and there is a case pending called DeFranco versus Bronstein on that issue in the state courts at the moment. I would argue that the limitation would be applied in this way. To the extent that the officer has full powers of arrest and must make judgments with respect to the with respect to broad guidelines such as are encompassed in the penal law, I would suggest that he would be an appropriate person. He would define a class of positions from which aliens can be excluded, although we do not, of course, necessarily reach that issue in this case. It is his powers of arrest, his powers of search.
Well, I'm very much aware we don't reach it in this case, but I'm trying to find out the extent of your argument. There are other states that do not have this kind of a requirement. Is that not so?
Well, that is open somewhat to question, Your Honor. We performed a survey at the request of the court, and it appears that at least 34 states have the requirement. The original 29 listed by in the opinions of the lower court, plus New York and California, which were not included, plus several other states which operate by regulation. That is not to say that the balance of the states do not have similar limitations. It is only to say that in the course of our endeavors, and apparently as verified by the FBI, they were not in statewide statutes. It is of some interest, Your Honor, to point out that while there would appear to be some states that do not have that limitation, 91% of the aliens live in states that do, in fact, have that limitation. And accordingly, I do not think that we could infer much from those states which might operate police departments without the limitation when, in fact, their alien population is so small as to not have a particular impact.
Do you know the what the origin is of this vast number of New York statutes that prescribe citizenship for masseurs, barbers, everything else? Do you know the historical basis for this?
Your Honor, I had occasion to review most of those statutes following this Court's opinion in Dougal versus Sugarman, and it's my understanding that their backgrounds are various and that they are variously justifiable. This particular statute that we are concerned with is, it seems to me, a common-sense matter of history and tradition. New York State has always required its police officers to be citizens, and I believe that the support for that
I don't think that's responsive to my question. I'm asking if you know the origin of these many multiple New York requirements, and I take it the answer is you don't know.
I do not, Your Honor.
This one was enacted in 1917.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the middle of a world war, and shortly before we entered it, correct?
Yes, that is certainly the case, and certainly the tradition of local police forces in the state naturally goes back much further, and it's quite apparent the City of New York limitation, for example, I think much predates.
But you didn't have a state police force until 1917.
No, not that I'm aware of in the formal sense that we talk about it here.
Mrs. Gordon, your answer to my brother Blackman's question suggests that you would necessarily be dealing with a total of 50 state police forces similar to New York with respect to alien requirements. I know of my own home state of Arizona, which has vigorously eschewed the idea of any sort of a state police force. They have a state highway patrol, which simply enforces traffic offenses. And it's my understanding that there are other states like that, too, so that you don't have 50 states who have a state police force like New York.
That is correct. And, for example, California, which does require citizenship for its state police officers, apparently does not require citizenship for its state highway patrol. Impossible elaboration of Mr. Justice Blackman's comment before. The Division of New York State Police is not divided into a highway patrol, a specialized division covering more significant matters, and a uniform force. It is one division encompassing three functional units, namely the uniform force, which provides a first-line response, and it consists of officers who go out and arrest and search and perform all the functions we discussed. One of those units is a thruway patrol unit, but its functions are not limited to giving tickets on the New York State thruway. Rather, it has the criminal jurisdiction for that thruway, and it arrests and searches and may stop and give highway tickets, but performs all functions of enforcement within that geographical area. In addition, I would comment that while the BCI, the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, is a plainclothes unit and it does have a specific state security function, its powers and its pursuit of its investigations, or its, the exercise of its powers in the pursuit of its investigation, is no different than the response required of the uniform officer who makes up the uniform force. One last aspect on that would be that the governor's detail, perhaps akin to the Secret Service of the United States, is itself a branch consisting essentially of uniform officers with several BCI personnel, so that there is no allocation of higher and lower functions within these three essentially functional units of the department.
If you do not prevail here, if your friend prevails and we reverse, do you think New York can keep these aliens off of juries?
Well, Your Honor, it
seems... Or do you see no connection between the
two? No, it seems to me, regardless of the outcome in this case, that New York would be able to keep aliens off of juries, as it, in fact, has a law on that point, because of this Court's decision in Perkins versus Smith.
How about voting?
But it calls, I was just going to say that, Your Honor, it calls into very serious question the basis for making analytical distinctions within the within governmental offices. For example, if, as this Court has at least impliedly held in its prior decisions, voting and legislating can be functions consigned to citizens, even though the voter is remote from the lawmaking process himself and his vote may be one in millions in any given state or general election, one, to hold for the appellant, it would appear to me, one would have to find that the police officer's exercise of these extraordinary powers of his arrest, of his search, of his use of force, indeed deadly force, his power over life and death of any individual in the society in the name of the state is somehow less important than that voter's vote. And I don't think that that can possibly be an analytically sound distinction. And accordingly, it would appear to me, as we have argued, that once we determine that the juror performs a governmental office such that citizenship may be required of him, we then must likewise find that the police officer similarly performs functions of significant and governmental nature such that, that his class may likewise be close to aliens. I think, by the way, that this is one of the faults of the dissent below. The dissent characterizes voting and legislating as political. It eschews the same characterization, obviously, for the police force. And I don't think that that distinction, again, can be made, because in a government of three co-equal branches, we cannot designate voting, especially under the circumstances as I outlined, where it may have very little, if any, potential ramification, as more important than law enforcement. Nor, of course, can we designate it as more important than the judicial function of interpreting the law. And I think this is where one of the erroneous assumptions that the dissent below makes. I would say several other points with respect to that dissent, and that is, with respect to the issue raised by Justice Mansfield and I think briefly by Justice Marshall before, that is, aside from the designation of a class of office holders, is there anything about the alien by virtue of his status which makes him peculiarly unsuitable to perform the functions of police? And while we urge this as a secondary matter, we believe that there are, in fact, such situations. For example, the alien cannot vote. To call upon him then for the vigorous enforcement of the law, laws which he has no voice in creating, would appear to be egregiously anomalous.
That was true in Ray Griffiths, that
is
anomaly,
true.
If it be one.
That is true, except we do not ordinarily consider the attorney qua attorney as a law enforcer. He may appear, and for that reason he is not an officer. Certain attorneys may indeed be governmental officers, but not all.
That also apply to 70% of the electorate that don't vote.
That is correct, Your Honor, but it is the capacity to be able to vote rather than that is at issue, and aliens are incapacitated from doing so. In addition, it is illustrative.
What about those state officers who make the decision whether to prosecute or not?
That may very well be one example of the attorney who is a governmental officer, but I do not think the attorney's, the prosecutor's decision not to prosecute in a case seemingly is akin to the police officer's decision not to arrest. And accordingly, if we were to say that the prosecutor...
Well, what about the decision to prosecute? If you've got the power to decide whether or not to bring a criminal charge that could result in life imprisonment or death... What about prosecutors? May they be aliens in your state?
The issue has not yet been presented, but it would seem to me, Your Honor, that one could fairly argue that they should, that that class should be limited to citizens, because that power to the use of the coercive power of the state, which is what the prosecutor does when he seeks an indictment or files an information, would seem to me to be governmental and arguably limited to citizens. However, the police
and judges are judges in your.
Judges are, by law, both federal and state law, Your Honor, public officers and are limited to citizens. However, I would call to Your Honor's attention that while the prosecutor's functions are drastic, perhaps the police officer's functions are even more drastic. We do not normally have the situation where a prosecutor must make an assessment as to whether, as to how much force or deadly force to use in a given situation. The state police officer exercises that function because he is indeed the representative of the state.
In other words, the prosecutor has no discretion to pull the trigger and shoot someone under any circumstances, but a policeman has it under many.
Whereas that is the very activity or very power that is vested in the policeman. That is correct. Returning for a moment to the other characteristics which aliens have, which we believe make them unsuitable, are those which evidence that his citizenship to another sovereign and his subjection to the laws of that sovereign. For example, an alien in the United States may be conscripted by the country of his nationality. However, in the United States, he may plead treaty exemption, he may plead international law, he may change his immigration status and avoid the draft and military service in the very country who people like appellant suggest have the laws which they wish to enforce. I think that's sufficient, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Weiss, do you have anything further?
Yes.
First, as to whether there are some police departments that do not have this requirement, they are collected, and or not collected, some are mentioned in footnote 4 of Judge Manfield's dissent. I would just like to focus briefly on the question of sovereignty and its relationship to taking an oath, which was discussed in Ray Griffith. It should be noted, by the way, in passing, that aliens who are in the Army also serve the military police there, so that aliens who pay taxes, who are subject to draft, who protect the government security, also protect the internal security inside the Army, which would seem to be a fairly strong analogy, as good as...
Are you suggesting that the Army, the military services, could not exclude aliens from military police duty?
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying they do not, Your Honor.
That's a matter of choice and discretion.
Yes, but that was the issue as to whether or not there were police departments which, in fact, continued with a uniform policy across the country. This is an illustration of a sovereign, the United States, that has chosen not to make this exclusion. The issue presented by the Army would, of course, be a much more difficult issue than this case, because it's both federal and also national security. But in terms of a congressional statement implicitly as to the reliability of aliens to serve in the police force, this seems to be a fairly powerful implication. The discretion that a police officer has is not a political discretion, it's not a policy discretion, it's a discretion different in function and in nature, those acts thought of in the Dougal suggestion. What you have there is political decisions of a policy-making sort. What you have here are factual applications. It functions inside a given framework rather than gives the framework. It functions in terms of facts rather than terms of competing public policies. As far as the representation of a sovereign by a police officer, I think it would be demeaning to this profession if we were to suggest that a police officer is more of a representative of the law, speaks more for the law than a lawyer. A lawyer is an embodiment to the citizenry as of the law. He speaks for the law to the citizen. He speaks through the law. He's an officer of the court. To whatever degree there could be some implication that the sovereign appearance of people acting on behalf of the state to exclude aliens, that would apply much more strongly to lawyers than to police officers, and that is a case which this court has already concluded its opinion on.
Well, of course, lawyers can't make arrests per se, can they?
They cannot. But police officers cannot be notary publics, file affirmations in court, and do those sort of things.
Well, they might if they became notaries public.
If they would have to, they have to have a different status to do it. They still would not be able to make affirmations.
What would happen to what's your view of the so-called citizen's arrest, which has been part of our folklore, if not our law? Would an alien not be able to make a citizen's arrest?
I would not know the answer to that. I would suggest that to whatever degree there's viability to the citizen's arrest, which I don't think there is much anymore, that a lawyer would not have particularly a higher role in that than anyone else, and that if it is defined as a citizenship historically, I suppose an alien could not.
Do you think an alien can make a citizen's arrest?
I would think not, by definition. Make a resident's arrest. I'm not sure anybody can make one, but I would assume by definition not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.